Welcome. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. It is the 28th of November 2011 here in Japan, and it is the 27th of November back in Toronto, where I'm joined on the line by our good friend Dan Dix of PressForTruth.ca. He's been on the program several times now to talk about some of his excellent documentary films, including United We Fall and Into the Fire. So, Dan, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, James. Good to be here.
Well, as I just mentioned, of course, you are a documentary filmmaker, and your most recent documentary was Into the Fire, about the shenanigans that were happening at the G20 in Toronto last year, an extremely important documentary that, once again, I'd like to recommend to folks out there. But for people who haven't seen it or haven't caught our previous conversation, perhaps you can just summarize what it was you were up to at the G20 in Toronto.
Sure, yeah. As soon as we heard that the G20 was coming to town, I pretty much began a process of assembling a team of camera people to help me cover the event. And even right up, you know, a couple months before the G20 came to town, we started filming everything, documenting everything we could. And then basically when the weekend finally came, we documented everything chronologically throughout the whole weekend and compiled it all together into the film Into the Fire, which is available online. People can check it out if they search for it at YouTube. That's what we were doing.
Absolutely. And as I say, I hope people do check it out, because it's actually quite disturbing and quite shocking, I think, for a lot of Canadians who tend to be quite complacent about their country and think that they are living in a nice, happy, friendly country, when in fact it really is becoming more and more of a police state. And the way that the police were able to completely and utterly subvert and circumvent the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms in the G20 was just really shocking and quite disgusting for a Canadian like myself. So tell people about some of the abuses you were able to document in your documentary.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I interviewed so many people and heard about so many stories, so many different experiences that happened there. And every story that came in, I just couldn't believe it. I just kept being surprised with the things that actually took place. Some of the ones that stand out for a lot of people is an interview I did with a gentleman named John Prine, who he's an elderly gentleman, and he is the one who had his prosthetic leg ripped off by the Toronto police. They ordered him to hop to a squad car, and when he said, "I can't physically do that, guys," they just dragged him across the pavement and threw him in the paddy wagon and took him away. They wouldn't give him his leg back because they said it could be used as a weapon. So those are the kinds of things that we saw going on there. There was another guy, this became a big story actually, when some of the footage was released of his arrest, Sean Salvatti, who was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. This is a guy who was just going to a Toronto Blue Jays baseball game. He came out of the game and he was on his way, and before he hopped into a cab, he casually said to a couple RCMP officers, "Good luck with Saturday." Apparently that was a wrong thing to say to them. They pulled over his cab, took him out, began questioning him, and when he said, "I want to speak to a lawyer," they took him down to 52 Division, strip searched him, beat him up, held him overnight. And this is a guy who had nothing to do with anything. He wasn't involved in any political organizations. He wasn't an activist, but he certainly is now. And as you said, I think that's one of the things that happened with G20 is it made Canadians aware that we do indeed have a problem here. I think it was for the first time that people really saw that kind of a tyrannical things going on in our city. So people woke up to the fact that, you know what, we got some things to worry about up here too.
Unfortunately, that's very much the case, and it's even worse than what we were able to document before when that documentary originally came out. As I know you know, but as some of the listeners may not know, the CBC has just released a report with some documents that have been uncovered showing that the G20 case reveals the largest ever police spy operation. So just reading from the beginning of that article, it says, "Police organizations across the country cooperated to spy on community organizations and activists in what the RCMP RCMP called one of the largest domestic intelligence operations in Canadian history, documents reveal. And it goes on to talk about this massive undercover operation, which was nationwide, involved cooperation with foreign intelligence, involved the use of undercover agents, involved all sorts of surveillance of individuals, and ultimately it resulted in the arrest of 17 people, six of which have actually been convicted. So a massive, massive, massive police sweep, and just unfortunately the encroaching police state presence in Canada being doubly confirmed here, even by our very own CBC. So I'd like to get your comments on what this this story reveals about what was really going on at the G20.
Yeah, well, it really doesn't come as too much a surprise for me. I mean, we've known for years now that police have been infiltrating activist groups here in Canada. There's no doubt that that's been a common practice that they've been doing for a number of years. The troubling thing about it is, I mean, when you're infiltrating a group like this, you would think that the whole point of it is to prevent bad things from happening. Meanwhile, clearly, that appears to not have happened. And, you know, the cars were still set on fire. The Black Bloc still did all the things that they wanted to do, while the police just stepped back and did nothing. So I don't know what exactly they achieved by infiltrating these groups. Or maybe the goal all along was something different, you know, because the Canadian government's been caught red-handed before, using undercover police officers to incite violence, to get the crowd, to rally up people to do illegal things. And it provides an excuse for the police to clamp down on the legitimate protesters. So that's something we have to keep an eye out. I mean, a lot of people might not remember that about 1 month before the G20 came to town, this kind of mysterious group popped up in Ottawa called the FFFC, and there was a firebombing of an RBC bank. And these guys claimed that they're going to come to the G20 and do something similar. And there's been a lot of reports that come out. People have suggested there's been CSIS involvement with that incident. And, you know, I find it interesting, too, that they would use fire. You know, it's kind of like some preconditioning going on there. All of a sudden, a month later, the big story is burning police cars. So we really have to wonder, what is their modus operandi? What is their point of getting in there and doing that? Sure doesn't seem to be that they wanted to stop bad things from happening.
Absolutely right. Unfortunately, absolutely right. That's very revealing, isn't it? How all of this preparation and all of the billions of dollars they spent on the preparation still resulted in burning police cars and all of the prime PR opportunities for people who want to push the police state, I suppose. All right. Well, I understand in the wake of this these G20 atrocities against the Canadian public, there was a lot of people who were going to be fighting this, and as I understand, there was some sort of class action kind of cases or something that were going to go on about police brutality. Can you tell us what's happened in the intervening months since the G20 ended? What has the outcome of these cases been?
Yeah, there's been a number of different cases, number of different lawsuits going on. The problem is, it's a very lengthy process. It's taking out a long time. I think that's done by design. These things are drawn out to take a long time. However, some things have happened already. There's been a number of police officers who ended up getting arrested, charged, I should say, with assault with a deadly weapon. So I do know that some of those things came out in the last few months, but I'm not sure about the state of some of the other lawsuits that are going on, how far into it they are going or what the results may be, but we're just going to have to keep an eye on it. These kinds of things sometimes can potentially take years. So hopefully these people stick with it, and we'll have to just wait and see.
Well, then finally today, you mentioned that people's anger at what happened at the G20 turned a lot of citizens who had no real political interest into activists. To what extent do you think that might account for the momentum and the popularity of the Occupy Toronto movement?
You know, that's a great point. I think ever since people witnessed what happened at the G20, their guard is up, and they're wanting to get active, get involved, get out in the streets and start trying to make a difference. So I think maybe a lot of the occupiers here in Toronto want to get out in the streets and get active because of some of the atrocities, because of some of the bad things that they witnessed at the G20 summit a year ago. The police just recently came in and shut down the Toronto Occupy protest. And I got to say, it was done in a very, very calm and peaceful manner. But I think the reason why that happened is the police had a PR problem. They knew that everybody's going to be watching very closely. The cameras are going to be rolling, and they better not, you know, they're already trying to restore the public's faith in them. So they knew they better not come down hard. And I personally heard some officers saying stuff like, if they want to talk to you, you go ahead and talk to them. If they want to come into the park, you let them in. If they want to leave the park, you just let them leave. Basically, zero confrontation today. And that's what they did. But again, I think that's because they knew everybody's got a close eye on them now because of what they did at the G20.
I think so. Well, that is somewhat of a hopeful sign, but we'll have to see, of course, what ultimately happens with the Occupy Toronto now that the evictions have been made. Well, at any rate, I know that you've been covering that for pressfortruth.ca and, of course, at your YouTube channel, which, if I'm not mistaken, is youtube.com/pressfortruth.
No, actually, it's Weaving Spider, all one word.
Sorry, youtube.com/weavingspider. And again, that's one word. All right, excellent. Well, that link will be in the interview notes for this interview. So, Dan Dix, always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you for joining us.